Good morning, good morning, good morning, and thank you for joining me on another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I, of course, am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I'm going to introduce you to some amazing women today. We have all women on today's show, which is pretty typical. We can't get the men to talk. But before I go ahead and introduce our guest, I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do, and that is to go out and be an evangelist for the Roundtable Talk Show. There's someone in your house, in your block, in your network, in your neighborhood, I don't know, they may be across the country, but someone you know needs this information. Maybe they're an entrepreneur, maybe they're a business owner, but they can learn from our guests. And that's what we're here to do. So while you're introducing the show to your network, I'm gonna go ahead and introduce our very first guest. You have seen her many times before. She is a regular guest, always helpful, always sharing, always willing to help someone else. And she has been here with me through the entire COVID pandemic. So when I think of the pandemic, I think about Dr. Jody DeLuca. Dr. Jody is a licensed clinical psychologist with over 20 years of experience. She is cited internationally in major journals and media venues for her expertise and research in emotion, behavior, and relationships. In addition to her private practice, Dr. DeLuca is a member of the American Psychological Association Media Referral Service. She is a frontline licensed clinical psychologist during the COVID era. Dr. Jody, how are you this morning?
I am great. And again, I want to thank you for having me on the show. It's such a privilege. It is indeed a privilege. So thank you, my friend. And yeah, it's we go way back, don't we? We associate each other with the pandemic. Yeah.
Yes, because you were on my show in April. And from April there, we were like fast friends and you just helped the other people. That's one of the things that stood out to me is you were always willing to help the other guests through what they were going through. But for some of the few people who've been hiding under a rock, who don't know who you are, tell us a little bit about yourself, Dr. Jody.
Well, like you said, I'm a licensed clinical psychologist, a doctor of psychology. I have a private practice. I've spent most of my career in the emergency room trauma burn units. And what else can I tell you? I'm an avid hiker. Mountains are my thing. But I think I'm most passionate just about understanding the experience of everyday people and their extraordinary experiences and what it means to be human.
Now, I'm going to ask you the same question. I think you're here just about every month. So every month I ask the same question. What do you see as the feel right now and what people are going through? Because I know we both saw the peaks and the valleys of what people were going through during this COVID pandemic. There was at the beginning, people were like, oh my God, I don't know what to do. And they went into this mode of, okay, I feel like I'm a little bit certain. And then everything closed back down. And it's like periods of emotional anxiety. What are you seeing and what do you feel right now in February of 2021?
You know, and that's a great question because it comes and goes in waves. So we begin to feel a little bit stabilized, have a little bit of light. And then there's this, you know, upswing of anxiety. Right now, it's the whole vaccine. A lot of people are anxiously waiting for the vaccine. And the remainder of the individuals are like, I'm not ready for it, or I may not get it. So there's a lot of anxiety around that, where the individual is in the phase of being allotted the vaccine. How long is this really going to take? Because we get a lot of mixed messages from the media. It's like, okay, are we going to be stabilized in the summer? Or is this going to carry through for another couple of years with the mask, with the social distancing, shelter in place? And now we've got all these mutations, which is what infectious diseases do. They replicate and mutate. So there's a lot of that fight and flight and a lot of that anxiety, and it goes up and down. I think things are better as far as in our country getting the pandemic under control, but I'm also seeing a lot of people are having a lot of uncomfortableness and difficulty integrating or stepping back into life. And that's normal. That's okay. Because, for example, you're in LA County, is that correct? LA County?
Correct.
Yeah. How long have you been shelter in place?
For a year now.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're coming, I think March 13 is when the whole country shut down, if I recall correctly. And how are you surviving with that? How long is it going to take you to feel comfortable to get in your car, drive out, and be out in the community without a mask? So yeah. All these different things. So there's, again, peaks and valleys, waves, anxiety, stabilization, a lot of depression. And unfortunately, there's just not enough of us as mental health, also known as behavioral health providers, but we do the best we can. We're in this as a country.
Absolutely. See, for me, I'm a recluse. I've always been a recluse who never leaves the house, used to working from home. So I've been training for this moment my entire life. there are days where I don't go anywhere, but then I go to the store and I'm like, every time I go to the store, I forget my mask. I get out the car. I'm like, dang, I forgot my mask. Go back to the car, get my mask, go in the store. Because aside from leaving the house, it's like my world is practically the same.
Interesting. Yeah.
So yeah. I'm going to come back to you, Dr. Jody, but I want to go ahead and introduce my next guest, Ms. Dana Altman. Dana is a bold and authentic mental health entrepreneur, author, and public health professional based in Boston, Massachusetts. A dual graduate of Northeastern University, MPH 18, BS Human Services, Dana brings both professional experience and personal expertise into the work she does for her community. Dana has held several roles in the human services field, working with youth in mental health settings and women who have experienced domestic or sexual violence. Good morning, Dana. How are you?
Hi, I'm great. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here. As you said, my name is Dana. I am in Boston currently, in my late 20s, a mental health entrepreneur, author, and advocate, as you said. So I run an organization called Bake It Till You Make It, LLC. Essentially, I am really passionate about combining baking and food with mental health conversation and authenticity and vulnerable dialogue. So essentially what I've been able to do is create different cookbooks, and I also got the opportunity to write my own story and publish that over the summer, just talking about using food as a way to talk about things that are really uncomfortable for a lot of people. And I'm really grateful to be able to share my story. Like Dr. Luca, I'm very passionate about the personal narrative and what other people's stories can bring out for others. And living with OCD and depression myself, I understand firsthand how isolating it can be to have a mental illness. So being an advocate and an author is really important to me and helping others kind of find their voice and sturdiness in their story.
Wow, Dana. So I'm going to go back to the food, because I know for a lot of people, whether it's mental illness or just dealing with their emotions, food is the way we kind of try to do that. And I talk about, for me, a year ago when I had came up with the idea for the show, it was roughly March 3rd. You know, March 3rd, the world was still wonderful. We were still open. Everything was good. And so right. I told myself, Sharifa, you're going to do the roundtable talk show. You have a new show coming up. You have to be ready physically, mentally, spiritually, and everything. So I started on this, like, eating healthy. I started doing keto. I started drinking plenty of water, exercise. And then the pandemic hit, and I was at McDonald's every day ordering mocha lattes. You know what I mean? I was like, I needed something. And food for me has always been that thing that, at least if nothing else, made me feel better.
Yeah, definitely. So I look at food as more of a tool to share stories. I mean, if we think about, like, from the beginning of time, breaking bread, sharing stories, talking about connecting with one another, definitely food provides comfort in a lot of ways for different people. Everyone kind of has a different relationship with food. But for everyone, we have to use it. We have to eat and fuel our bodies. I'm definitely someone who is a proponent of, like, all foods fit. So being able to eat in moderation and kind of no food off limits, because I feel like that really perpetuates diet culture. But I totally hear what you're saying. I know that the pandemic has been challenging for a lot of people in terms of turning to food for comfort, which in some respects, there's nothing wrong with that. That's how we, how a lot of people kind of deal with their emotions. So kind of looking at each person's relationship with food, I think, is really important. But again, for me, I really use it as that storytelling tool.
So you mentioned you shared your story. So for people who aren't familiar with you, can you give us a little bit about your story?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am in my late 20s now. And I think I've always struggled with anxiety and depression from a really early age. But it wasn't until I went to college where things kind of fell apart. I think when I was in high school and even middle school, I was able to really, with the help of my family and kind of my general support system, manage what I didn't even know at the time was mental illness or what was anxiety. But then when I went to college and was kind of pulled away into a new environment, things got really difficult for me. I ended up taking a semester off just to deal with my depression, some suicidal ideation, and really my major turning point was that semester off and getting into a program where I met my therapist, who I've now been with for almost 9 years. And just our work together has been so healing. And not only therapy, but also advocacy, creating this organization or organizations like it. Throughout my mental health journey, I've created like different nonprofits, really been an advocate for storytelling and open and honest dialogue. So I still struggle every day. I'm grateful that I haven't needed to be in like a higher level of care in a really long time, but it is a daily struggle for me to maintain my emotional wellness, especially in the pandemic. But I think I do that through connection and also advocacy.
I think whatever you do it well. I mean, just look at your smile. You are glowing. You are happy. You are surviving. And I didn't want to interrupt, but when you were like, and I'm in my late 20s, all I was thinking was like, oh, you're a baby. Like, you have so many years to come, you know, to go, just like I do. We all do. But the fact that you're still smiling and you're still here, you know, all of us have ups and downs. Yeah. And like we have our past guest, Leslie Hooper's always on the show, do peer counseling. That what she does, Peer Hopes, her company, she always says ups and downs and merry-go-rounds. And that's what life is. When you flatline, that's when it's a problem. But Dana, I'm going to come back to you. I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Ms. Sabria Morris. Sabria is the owner and creator of Bank Powder. Bank Powder was created as a spiritual tool that utilizes an infusion of earth energy and the energy of banking institutions, investment banks, and the Tao. Bank Powder is used to draw prosperity and abundance into your home and business lives. Good morning, Sabria. How are you?
Good morning, everyone. I am doing well, and I am thankful for the opportunity to be on your show. Thank you.
You are welcome. I thank you. Look, Sabria, let me tell you, I tell people all the time, I do this show for selfish reasons. I love to learn, and I never heard of such a thing. Investment banks with earth energy? Tell me more. I have to hear more about this.
Well, let me start off with how and why that's even in the realm. So back in 2018, I guess it was when I started my spiritual journey, or rather, you can say journey to self, and you may, come on, baby. My charger, can you plug it in? My charger is about to die. So here's, you know, my thing, you know, something always happens, right? I thought I gave it enough time. But in 2018, I started on my spirit. Thank you. On my spiritual journey, or really, I didn't even know it was a spiritual journey. It was a journey to self, right? I knew it was some gap, something. I had this great life and everything was going well. So why did I still feel like something was missing? So I went to this journey of discovery, looking deeper within. And a couple years later, in meditation, I just heard bank dirt from my ancestor. So I just spent a little time with that, and I got some soil out of the ground, and I came home, spent some time with that. And as I start thinking, what can I do with this? How can I utilize this? I realized that what I was doing was tapping into the energy of the earth. So the energy of abundance, the energy of regrowth, renewal, restoration. And I wanted to be able to channel that energy in this product and bring it to my life first and everyone else's life. And so as I got that soil, then what also started coming to me was to get ground herbs. Ground herbs have properties, different properties. We may not know that. We just use them for food, not really realizing it's medicinal, and they have all other kind of properties. So I got ground herbs that have properties of abundance, prosperity, love, protection, peace, joy. And I mixed that with the soil as well as ground crystals. Crystals, again, that's an earth energy as well. So tapping into the abundance of that. And then next thing you know, we have bank powder. You know what I'm saying? So it's just a, this is the dirt, the soil on the bottom. It's been brought up to a powder. What I do is I have a purification process. So I take the soil that I get out of the ground, I put it over fire, and I remove all non-beneficial energies from it. So I get rid of check to check mentality, lack mentality, scarcity mentality, not good enough, feeling like you're not the right color, not the right gender. I just remove all of that with air magic just by speaking over this soil and placing my intentions into it. And once I do that, I bring that soil up to a powder. And so that's the powder. These are the herbs, the ground herbs, the layer of crystal. And I started off with two bank powders. And now I have seven and an edible version of it too, which has three of its own. And then I have bank powder remnants. This is the remnants after it's sifted. I have pins that have bank powder in it, and they're just black ballpoint pens that write smoothly and help with your manifestations and add intensity and amplify your manifestations. I have pendulums that I have filled with bank powder, and they help with your divination. So it's turned into its own brand. I'm very proud of it. It was given to me from my ancestors, and it really does tap into that earth energy and bringing that into all of our lives and for us to create generational wealth.
Sabria, wow. Wow. That's all I can say is wow, because, you know, from your bio, I was confused. I was like, what is this? What? I didn't even understand what this is. But when you explain it, it makes so much sense. Now, I was trying to figure out which way I was going to go, because I just have to say this, like, if this would have been years ago, people would have tried to burn you at the stakes, you know, but now you're speaking your truth. You're speaking up, and more people are waking up to the knowledge that there's more than we understand. So I think what you're doing is very powerful. I have so many more questions though, Sabria. Whew, I'm going to come back to you. I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Miss Mary Gillerman. Mary was married to John for the last 16 years of his life. She is the director of communications and a senior Pellin practitioner at the Pellin Institute International, which offers training, coaching, and counseling and contribution training and guest star online and in person. She is a licensed marriage and family therapist in California and a writer and solo show artist. Good morning, Mary. How are you?
Well, thank you. I'm fascinated by everything I've heard.
Tell us about yourself, Mary. Who are you? What are you passionate about?
Well, I share a lot with Dana. I'm really passionate about mental health recovery. I'm supposed to be here to talk about this mm-hmm. book about my husband, who was a big film director, retired when I met him, but obviously I learned about his life. But he and I both struggle with very extreme mood swings, what gets labeled bipolar disorder. Mm-hmm. And I don't like the label, because I was lucky enough to meet my therapist when I was 26, and that's 43 years ago. So I've been with the same therapist, the founder and director of the Pellin Institute, Peter Fleming. And in those days, in the late 60s and 70s, there were books like The Myth of Mental Illness by Thomas Satch. And there was an idea of a humanistic approach to mental illness, that we all can strive for wellness and find wellness. And then there was the medical model, which is the prevalent model now. And, you know, I'm aware that medication can really, really help people, but I was kind of stubborn radical, and I wasn't going to take medication. And my husband didn't take medication either. And he was like a typical creative person with extreme mood swings. In 1957 and 58, he made 5 feature films and 13 TV episodes. Like, I don't know when he found time to sleep. And he would told me that in between shoots, the wrap of a film, when everyone went home, he'd go into his depression. And then he'd get all creative again with the next film, and he'd be up on a high. And I had a similar pattern without the creative output. And I've been able to come to a place of contributing to others through my understanding of how I got well. I don't have big swings. I don't have depression. I'm calm most of the time. And the answer to that inside contribution training is you heal by contributing and you learn by teaching. So my one tool in particular that helped me is called the pendulum of emotions. And it's a way to, when you have extreme mood swings, you think, the only time I feel great is when I'm high. So I can't give that up. And you don't understand the relationship between feeling great and feeling terrible. And because I trusted Peter Fleming so much, I had a go at trying to modulate my swings. And it took a long time. I was hospitalized once. I probably would have been hospitalized many times if I wasn't on the mental health recovery journey. And so it was a long journey. It's not a 5-minute thing if you choose not to take medication. But over the years, I modulated, got closer and closer to the calm in the center. And ways I contribute from that, directly, obviously, through my work with the Pellin Institute, although I have a license, kind of throw my lot in, hey, I really care about mental health recovery. I'm really an advocate for mental health recovery. I really believe the psyche wants to be well, and that if you have the right tools, this is a tool-based training, contribution training. That's why it's not called contribution therapy. The nearest analogy is all the tools the 12-step program gives you, that gives you emotional balance, emotional expression, a sense of purpose, feelings of accomplishment. 12-step programs do that, and those are the tools we teach. Common sense things: get feelings of accomplishment, get true rest, spend time in the calm, find your purpose. And with those, you know, ideas that everyone knows some of them intuitively, and other ones, like if you go up, you're going to crash. I didn't know intuitively. You can learn these tools and start to apply them. And I applied a lot of them in bringing the book into being. You know, my husband had a reputation because of childhood trauma, because of being a drinker, because of being a perfectionist, because of being a passionate Frenchman. Or once upon a time, before he died in 2015, the only entry on Wikipedia was about his bad temper. That's all it said about him. He did 34 feature films, and all that anything said anywhere, any paragraph in a book about him would say about his bad temper. And there's no book about his work. And even in the 2016 Oscar ceremony, they left him out of the immemorial thing, when he did Towering Inferno, Death on the Nile, King Kong with Jessica Lange, whom he discovered, and he did 31 other films, British black and white films that are amazing, and he's just been ignored. So once he died, I thought there's going to be a book about him, and that's what this is, with 9 co-authors. It's a very, very, it's called John Gilliman, The Man, The Myth, The Movies, the myth bit being he's more than just a bad-tempered old so-and-so. And look at his contribution to film. And
I will check it out. I definitely want to check that out. But what's interesting to me, I'm watching this whole panel, and I love doing this show. This is my passion. This is my heart, like Dr. Jody knows. Like, I just love doing it because I don't select the dates when the guests are to appear. The guests select the dates, and somehow, some way, it all just kind of lines up. I was listening to Mary, and Mary said, I was supposed to talk about the book, but then you get here, and all of a sudden, you start having all these other guests, and you're like, oh, let me talk about this, let me talk about that, and it just comes to you. And what's interesting is 3 out of 4 people, their focus is on mental health. But even the fourth person with Sabria, years ago, if you would have came to someone and said, basically, this information was channeled, because that's what it was. If it came to you, it was channeled to you, people would have literally said, no, Sabria, no, you have mental illness, stop listening to the voices. But in 2021, people are opening up to the idea and the knowledge that is more than just us here. Now, Sabria, when you started on this journey, was there anyone who said you cannot make a business out of this?
Well, when I started on this journey, I realized I needed to, I went in a silo. I needed to disconnect from everyone and silence all the voices, because too many voices had influence over me and the decisions that I made. So that was one of the immediate things that I did, is I just cut everything off as peaceably as I could, but I put myself first and I did what I needed to do. And because when I had ideas about different things, people, for one, it was given to me, right? So it was given to me. No one else understood. No one else could relate or resonate with a lot of different things that were coming up in me. So I didn't share this idea with anybody before I went live. Before I did it, I shared it with one person, and that was my mentor. But I didn't share it with anybody else because it would never have taken off. Never. So once I did do it, I still got like, you know what I mean? And I probably still get that. Like, my mom has never asked me, what am I doing? But as she's seen the success, she's seen it grow, she's seen it, the adoption of it. Now she's like, well, I'm proud of you, but she still doesn't know what I'm doing. So it's something. I found a supportive community in a Facebook group, in a Facebook community. People who I never knew, who do not know me. I've met some of them personally now. That is like a familial group to me. And I don't know them, you know, but people in my life, personal, my family, they support me because of love for me, but they, most of them are not into this lifestyle and still are trying to figure out what is she doing. But they know me enough to know that, well, if she's doing it, it's something in it. You know what I mean? They know the quality of my character enough to know that it's, you know, but a lot of people would have probably wanted to Baker Act me. Mm-hmm. For the things, yes, that I believe now, the way that I see life, the way that I see, you know, not only the seen part of life, but the unseen part of life, you know.
Are you, yes, in Florida?
I'm from Florida, but I'm in Atlanta.
Okay, because you use the term Baker Act, and that's every state that has Florida? Their. No. And I'm like, oh, she's from Florida. Okay.
You're good.
And tell us what the Baker Act is.
And that's so, just when your family or your friends, they really, really love you and they're concerned about you and your behavior and your actions. And so they have enough proof to have you, I don't want to say locked up, but admit it.
Yeah, inpatient
to be seen. And I think you have to stay for a total of 3 days.
Yeah, yes. Actually 72 hours.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
So Sabria, are you married? I mean, or do you have a significant other? Were they on board with this whole venture?
I do have a significant other, and he felt the brunt of me isolating myself. But our marriage was strong enough that we ended up separating for a minute. A lot of people, I mean, our close family knows that, but I was just so different trying to figure myself out. I just didn't know. I didn't even know how to explain it. You know what I mean? I just did not. It was another dear person to me that I lost, like my best friend. And you know, I said lost, but who knows what will happen with that relationship as we get there. But my husband and I ended up separating for 6 months. He moved to another house. We have a 12-year-old son. So this was impactful. This was something that I just, And because we really had, we were dating for 2 months, got engaged, got married within 4 months, been married for 9 years this year. So we've had like a love story relationship. And so when this came up, what is going on? We didn't even understand. I cried like a baby every time he left. You know what I mean? It's like, you have to leave. What are you making? But I'm like, but I don't know. You know, our vibration. It was crazy. But yes. He loved me enough to give me time to figure That's myself beautiful. Out. And then what I realized that, well, the things that I thought were holding me back and a problem in him, it was just the reflection of me that I was seeing in him. And when I got to that level of maturity, I was able to open myself back up to him and then realize that the work still is in me and on me to do. So I'm not projecting and blaming him for everything, you know. So,
but you know, and wow, what an incredible panel today, Sharifa. but yes. You know, the thing is, being human means actually learning to identify, but living and navigating life with our emotions and our thoughts, which are so hard to quantify. So it goes back to kind of what Mary and Dania were saying about understanding what we're feeling, making that connection, and quantifying what we're feeling. And that takes great courage to be able to look at the journey inside each of us and pull it out and say, this is what I'm feeling, these are the facts. And then everybody here has the support that is so essential in continuing with the challenges that life presents, which are so difficult. And at times, yeah, people really question their existence. What am I here for? What is this all about? So another panel of heroes, as far as I'm concerned, Sharifa, just incredible, incredible. And I have to say, in my experience as a clinician, working with individuals who experience bipolar disorder, which years ago, Mary, you and I know, was named manic depression. But of all the disorders, I really think bipolar disorder is the most challenging for individuals and their families. And I get so upset when I hear stories like, Mary, you're saying, all that was published on my husband, this great creative individual's life and accomplishments, was the emotional issues and everything negative. Unfortunately, that is so common, but good for you that you're changing that stereotype, just like Dania. And just like you, my friend, with the bank powder.
I think one of the things that's really interesting about creative people is how many of them, whether or not they get labeled bipolar, experience, you know, the rush of creativity and the rush of productivity. And then they kind of are drained and collapse. And my teacher, Peter Fleming, told me that although Van Gogh had like really extreme highs, from his letters to his brother, it's clear that he actually painted when he was calm.
Oh, wow.
And I find that really fascinating. And I think,
yes.
Anyway, it's just like, there's so many creative people in Hollywood who are doing amazing work and elsewhere, of course. And then in private, they suffer a lot. Yeah. And that's, you know,
absolutely.
So that's one of the things I'm interested in, because this, you know, I lived with it through living with my husband. And because of my knowledge and what I'd done with my own life, he ended up with a few years, not that many, because when he started to try to write a script, he'd go in the same manic state. But he ended up kind of calm and fulfilled. So that I was very happy to see him do that. And I wanted to say to Sabria that, you know, because we met when I was 45 and he was 73, we'd both had a whole life finding out who we were and adjusting to a marriage. And however much you love someone, especially with a difficult person, and we both had mood swings still at the time, that's really hard. And then, I really commend you for your courage in going inward and following the inner call and producing this. I want to buy some, it sounds really
good. I do too. I'm like, send me some.
and then coming back together again, because communication is so important in a marriage. And if you didn't intuitively know that, or in all relationships, but particularly in marriage, where you have to balance who am I really as a person and then who are we as a couple.
And
so it's a wonderful story.
And allowing each other to change and to grow and resetting expectations of each other. Like, we can't box ourselves in because this is the person we met and fell in love with. Allow me to grow and grow with me. You know what I mean? And that's what we've been able to do, and people who are successful are able to do. And a few other things I just wanted to say. We were talking about bipolar people. I feel like the mental hospitals, the street corners are full of people who are tapped in to this other world, but no one understands, and they make them feel crazy because they hear voices, they see visions, and there's no help for them. And so they're homeless, they're now drug addicts and alcoholics, and are out here trying to figure it out on their own because they've been stereotyped as crazy. And so I have a heart for that. And so when I hear you speak of mood disorders and just all of it, it's so tied, it's so interconnected in my eyes.
Absolutely. I always say that. I mean, and now running for Senate in 2024, the forefront of what I'm passionate about is homelessness. And part of the reason is because I was homeless myself. I lost everything that I own. But I also know that until you give people hope, they're not going to want to go back into society because they face the same problems that they had before. So it's so many different issues that go along with it. But Dana, I would really love to hear your thoughts. You're back there quiet on the roundtable talk show. You might not get a word in edgewise.
I'm in there. And processing everyone's like connections to one another. I was going to say, like, there is so much integration in what we all do in terms of mental health and work, and also like the internal process and finding like your true self and growing into a different person or your most evolved self, I guess. And totally agree with what everyone's been saying in terms of like stigma that surrounds mental health challenges and mental illness and homelessness and all that goes with some of the more like difficult mental health disorders and how hard that can be and the work that we're all doing to try and allow people to tell people like they don't have to hide. Like that's a big thing that I believe in. Like it's okay. Like you don't have to hide. You're not alone. And like there are resources and there is support. And you know, being like living proof of that, I really hope to stand out and talk about it. So just absorbing all of the genius and brilliance on this call and thinking about how we're all related in that capacity as well.
But one of the things I noticed in what Dana said was originally was about the narrative, telling the narrative. And one of the things that I kind of fell into through guidance from above was telling my narrative of my recovery story. And part of my not wanting to take medication was because I was aware of getting guidance and I didn't want to dull that. So I wove my rather complicated recovery story into a one-woman show called From Crazy to Sane, or Am I? A Tale of Feminine Mysticism, Magic, and Madness.
Is that a book or a show? Because I want to see it.
It's a one-woman show. I performed it for the first time. I'm not an actress. It was my first acting experience. Solo show is the most difficult form of theatre because you play all the characters. Yeah. I'm currently writing my second show, which is called Love on the Other Side of Death. And it has three main characters. The narrator is John and Mai's cockapoo dog, me and John. We're the three main characters.
Yeah. So for the first show, Mary, is there any way we can watch it?
Well, I will be performing it again, but I'm determined to have it properly memorized and I'll let you know.
Yes. I want to watch it, but I just want to go ask Mary a quick question. When you talk about you and your husband and the different mood orders, did you have to do anything particularly different in your house? Like, did you have to sleep in different rooms? Were you up at different times? Like, did you have to stay separate in order to stay together?
We did in the end up sleeping separately, but it was more to do with getting older and getting pains. I would wake up and lie there for hours and I couldn't cope with anymore. So that was part of the, you know, just getting older.
Okay. I was just saying, because I don't know if he was up for hours on hours and days. You might like, I want to go to sleep.
We'd be separate then. And one thing I particularly remember in relation to moods was he was used with his first wife to fighting like this, and I didn't do that right. So when we first met, he'd follow me around the house shouting at me. And I'd said, you are not gonna follow me around the house like this. You have to find a way to stop it. And he said, okay, well, if I don't shout at you in that way, I'll go into a brown study. That means go into just being quiet, sullen, sulking. And I said, it's a deal. And he didn't stop shouting at me, but he never followed me around the house again. And I would just wait it out And then I'd say, very English, this, would you like a cup of tea, darling? And I'd time it so he'd say, yes, please, and then it would blow over.
I love it.
I like that. I like the whole English idea. Jody, you were going to say something.
Well, you know, and I think clear across the board with any individual, the important thing is validation, that knowing we're not alone in whatever challenges we face. And so many times I notice that when people are told, is this what you're feeling? Is this what you're experiencing? And they're like, oh my God, yeah, that there's such a significant decrease in the lack of self-esteem and the lack of self-confidence. And you see them starting to realize, I'm not the only one who goes through this in life. Even though there may be a lot of negative feedback from other people, or you're crazy, or you're this, I'm not alone with this. And there is hope. And it takes a lot of courage to pick yourself up, especially if things that are debilitating are not things that you can reach out, see, and just fix. It's not a quick fix. And we've heard from Daniel, we've heard from Mary, and we've also, you know, we've discussed how the fluctuations in mood create a lot of difficulty in relationships. But learning to communicate and learning to actually identify the triggers, but also doing the best you can to do better, to reach out for help, but also to accept yourself. That's very difficult. It's very difficult. Everybody here on the panel seems to have done that, but okay, hasn't been an easy journey.
But let me ask you this, Dr. Jody, when you say learning to accept yourself, I think it's more than just, and this is just me, I always say this, I don't have a degree in absolutely anything. I graduated from the School of Hard Knocks, but it's not just the individual who has learned to accept it. I think more as a society, and especially in the last year, we've seen a society who says, you know what, wait a minute, we're all going through something. We're all anxious. We're all afraid. And in a way, we used to make the discussion on mental health a taboo. Like, let's just go lock them up, put them on a Baker hold, and don't even, you know, they don't even exist, pretty much, to where now we're taking a look at people and saying, look, kind of accepting them.
Well, and people are more educated. People are more educated. And what was Sabrina was saying too, you know, she was looking inside of herself. She understood why in your situation, Sabrina, you had to have an involuntary admission, which the Baker Act is in Colorado. We call it M1. I'm not sure in other states what that's called, but people are more aware of mental health. With this pandemic, that's really shot it up into, you know, a level of awareness like never before, which it should. And they're advocates for themselves. But you always put yourself down. You always say you don't have any degree. You have the experience you have that your life has given you far surpasses the degree situation. You know, that's there's so much that education.
Not me putting me down. It's just my disclaimer. So when people try to sue me for my advice, I give them, I'm like, look, I don't have a degree. This is just some stuff.
Well, I'm glad that you're aware of that because you have so much to offer. Mm-hmm. And
this is my therapy.
You know, I call it as I see it.
Yeah. I want to go over to Dana real quick. Have you seen a change in acceptance in your 20-something years?
Yes, absolutely. I think that's one of the gifts of the pandemic. I mean, there's hardly any, but that is one thing that I think, like Dr. Jody was saying, just like the awareness, you know, that everyone's experiencing a collective trauma right now. Like we're all together in our current situation, and really having more understanding of what it's like to live with mental health challenge or mental illness. I also think that in a way, social media has really helped with that, or at least like that's one main platform that I've been able to really tell my story on. And there's definitely like pros and cons to all social media. Like I know that. And for other entrepreneurs, I'm sure that's like a tool that you use. But I do think that people are a little bit more open there. And hopefully that can be translated into everyday conversation. And I just want to say, Mary, I really hope I can see your one woman show. One of my dreams is to create some type of like mini series out of my cookbook because it has different people's stories while they're sharing recipe. So I think there's a serendipitous connection today with each of you, but that, yeah. That just really inspired me to maybe pursue that a little bit more.
I think one of the things that's really important about surviving the pandemic that doesn't apply to everybody because we don't all have access to go online and go in Zoom meetings, but for those who do, finding ways to develop purpose in spite of what's happening. And the solo show community just hopped online. You know, one woman show, one person show, hopped online. We have classes online. And actually, you can actually see an excerpt from my new show, because on the 27th, 3 p.m. Pacific time, there's a solo show salon out of towners. That means people like me who are not in LA can't go to the White Fire Theatre where the other people are performing. Is you get 12 minutes. This will be pre-recorded. And I'm doing the first 12 minutes of that show with my dog narrating and John and me having the conversation with the dog.
I do
love it.
That's interesting. I would love to tune in.
I'll make sure you know the details. But the other thing I wanted to say that has been really important in my own recovery and in the clients that I've worked with is I'm trained in something called transparency, which clearly Dana uses intuitively. And that means sharing your own story with people and sharing your own vulnerabilities as appropriate for that person's support and development. So for example, if I'm working with someone with really deep depressions, like my deep depressions, I let them know that I know what it feels like to not be able to get out of bed until 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And that getting out of bed that day is a big accomplishment when you're that depressed. Yeah. So you build these little blocks it really reduces shame. You know, that's what's so wonderful about this kind of show that we've got on this topic. It so reduces shame. And hearing people say, I had this suffering and I've transcended it, comes back to hope, like Dr. Jodi was saying.
Well, and what you've done and what Dania is doing is validating their experience. Mm-hmm. And I think what we need essentially at the very core of being human is we need acceptance regardless of anything. Diversity, mental health, social, all of that. We need acceptance. We need to know that we matter. And we need to know that at any time in a 24-hour period, any one of us can be out of sorts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right? Go ahead, Dana.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, thank you. So Brené Brown, who she is she has no idea who I am, but I always like to think that like she's a mentor of mine because I've read and listened to her all the time. But something that she says about shame is that like the more you harbor it, the more it grows. So I love like what Mary was saying about transparency and Dr. Jodi here, like the idea that putting it out there, like telling your story, owning that shame, it really reduces it. That shame like breeds on that just like the individual harboring it alone. So kind of lightning, that's always been my kind of like tagline and my mission is like lightening the load for someone else. And while I do that, I am also able to come to terms with my own story, which it sounds like a lot of us can relate to today.
I know I can definitely relate. I utilize my story all the time of being laid off 8 times, being homeless, divorced twice, going through so many different challenges because I don't want anyone to come to me and say, Sharifa, I can't do this because. And I'm like, nope, I can show you a guest. I can show you an interview. I can tell you a story of someone who has gone through a similar situation as you and they have overcome. So you can overcome. Like, I do not believe in any excuses whatsoever. If there's a will, there's a way. That's what I believe. Now, I want to go back to Sabria because we got off into mental illness. We're passionate about helping people, making a change. But I wanted to know, how do people utilize the dirt? Do they just keep it in a jar? What do they use it for?
So again, the intention is to raise your vibration, your vibration, your internal vibration. Your vibration determines your frequency and what's brought to you, what you attract and magnify to you. So we use these, you activate this. This is the layered jar version. See the layers? But I also have it in a shake. So this is all mixed together. This is my grandfather, by the way. This is this all mixed together, right? So you have two different bank powder or bank powder shake. The way I suggest that you activate this is you use your palm chakras. You warm them up. Your palm chakras are energy centers within your body. And you can channel energy. You can infuse things with them. So you warm them up. You hold this in your hands and you just think about what it is that you want, that you're working to bring forth in your life. I just give like just a quick, simple example is I want to go on vacation. So, okay, I want to go to Cape Cod. Cape Town, South Africa. So in my mind, I'm just sitting here and now I just, okay, now I'm just starting to see myself. I'm starting to see. I planned this vacation. I've bought the tickets. I've scheduled my hotel. Oh my gosh, 5-day countdown. And I just start seeing it, feeling it in my heart. Whatever it is that I want to do, I am now transferring all of that energy into this so that this can work on my behalf. I put my intentions into this product via my hands, my visualizations, and my feeling, what I feel. And I get to a certain point to where I actually truly feel it and see myself in that place, in that position, in possession of whatever it is, be it monies, asset, whatever it is. And once you get that feeling in your heart and you truly are smiling and you just feel yourself there, you've activated this to work in your behalf. Now you can just sit this wherever. I consider this spiritual home decor. You can sit it on a fireplace. You can sit it on your nightstand. You can sit it in your kitchen. You can sit it wherever. And just when you walk by, you just know that this is working on your behalf. You're on your behalf. And you can go and give it a little more energy and touch it whenever you want to. You can just make eye contact and you know that, I'm so excited about my trip. You know, just give it more energy and more energy. Another way, if you didn't want to use your palm chakras, you can just sit a tea light candle on it and do the same thing with visualizing, feeling it.
That kind of is like manifesting, right?
That's exactly what it is.
Okay.
That's exactly what it is. And you're tapping into that earth energy to do so. So the abundance of earth, Mother Earth herself, even if I didn't tap into banks, right? Tap into the energy of the monies that flow through banks, that digital money stream in the ether. Even if I didn't tap into that and say, hey, I'm redirecting this energy to go to your bank account, to your life, your business. Even if I did not say that and I just tapped into the energy of Mother Earth herself, that's enough. Right. But the other dirts that I have, the other powders that I have, they also include bank dirt, mega church dirt. Think about all the volume, the money, the consistency, the reliability of money coming through that institution, casinos, graveyards. Yes. This is an ancestral protection powder, you mean? Anyway, I'll show you the layers.
I like the layers.
And this is based off of bank and graveyard dirt because I am calling off on our ancestors to protect us. I also have one of ancestral wealth that calls on all of the wealth in our bloodline. So all of the talents, the traditions, the norms, the skill set that is within our bloodline that has been buried, rejected, denied, stolen, whatever, I'm calling all of that forth to activate that DNA with us, to bring this forth in our lives. So all of that energy and intention are placed in these products. They all have different purposes. Golden Sachs is for generational wealth. Again, this is ancestral protection. This is for protection for whatever. That is how you use the layer jar. You set your intentions and you set it. Once that thing that you set your intention to, so you've gone to Cape Town now, you come back, you can clear this. You can get a sage or Palo Santo stick and just clear it and do it again. What's the next
That's a lot of information, Sabria. We are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching the show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives, and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And since we're with you, Sabria, go ahead and start.
Okay, thank you so much. There's so much more to say about bank powder, but since we're short on time, what I want you to walk away with just knowing is that Let's just start with our mind, your mindset, your thoughts control your reality. Be specific, be intentional in your mind and what you're thinking, what thoughts you allow to come in. What you focus on will most indefinitely grow. That is the reason for what you see around you now. Take a higher perspective. Make sure that when you're looking at things, that you're looking at things from the right perspective. I heard us talking about COVID. To me, I launched a business in the middle of COVID because I did not take a perspective where I was the victim. No, I took a perspective of how can I overcome? How can I do what I need to do? So we need to learn how to shift our paradigms, shift behaviors that no longer serve us. I want us to do that. I want us to focus on that. I want us to focus on loving ourselves first and giving other people the overflow of that. You cannot give from an empty cup. You have to fill yourself first. And then lastly, I want us to focus on trusting ourselves, trusting our intuitions, our hunches, in those things that come up. That is what will guide you to your true and your unique self. Tap into it and trust it. Absolutely. And I can be found, and my products can be found at Bank Powder, B-A-N-K Powder, P-O-W-D-E-R.com.
BankPowder.com. Thank you, Sabria. Mary, what do you have for us?
Well, sorry. So just on the finding things, you can find this book about John's films on Amazon.com. Pretty internationally. And my takeaway is, you know, this book took 5 years to bring about, trying to collect people to write who really knew about film, because I just knew about the man. And we wove a really delightful story of kind of conventional film criticism with my take on him. So it's a love story as well as a film criticism book. But the point I'm leading up to is, well, I was someone who spent years, I probably spent 15 years of my life, in my 69 life years, in really deep depression, if you put it all together. And I was someone who couldn't get out of bed. And then I turned into someone who could have an idea and make it happen, even if it took 5 years, who could go to a writing class and then say, oh, I'm going to do a one-woman show. I haven't acted before. I'm going to take on the most difficult kind of theater there is. I won't say it was easy, but the point is that it goes back to what Sabria said, that opening to intuition and opening to hope and ideals and getting the right kind of help. You know, getting help from family or friends, literature or therapists or 12-step groups, because getting help wherever you can, building that hope, fostering the growth and connecting with people like the wonderful women here who want you to be your best self. But I think understanding that there is hope if you seek connection and support and build. Don't worry about going slowly. If you've been broken, like I was broken, or Dana was broken, you know, you need a lot of support and you need faith, but you can get there and you can understand that a complete recovery is possible.
Thank you, Mary. Dana, what do you have for us?
Well, thank you, everyone, first of all. I just loved our conversation this morning and feel like so much energy and excitement. I guess my main takeaway is just that if you are struggling, you deserve help. You know, there's no like guidelines in terms of like struggling the most that allows you to be like deserving of help. I think that was something that I thought for a long time, and just struggling in any capacity or wanting to reach out for support is, there's nothing wrong with that. It's brave, it's bold, and I hope that you can do that. There are resources and there is support out there. And then lastly, about in terms of like my organization and the cookbooks and my own story book, you can find more information on bakeittillyoumakeit.co. And I would love to hear from you. And as I said, story sharing narratives is really what fills my cup. So I love being able to hear other people's stories, and there's ways to contact me there.
I love it. Bake it till you make it. Ooh, yeah. bakeittillyoumakeit.co. Jody, Dr. Jody, another great show. What do you think? What do you have for us?
You know, it's remarkable and it's a privilege to be here. And that's what it's all about. Each individual's backstory, the journey in life, the challenges, the joys, the sorrows, all of that, which make us each unique. Acceptance, hope. Hope is so important. And everybody here has demonstrated, yeah, there is hope, especially when you come out of the experiences that challenge the existence of who you are. Moving forward, imagine yourself where you want to be. Like Sabria was saying, manifest that, think it, feel it. It's out there. And God bless everyone. Take good care.
Wonderful. What a wonderful way to end the show. I want to thank you all for being guests on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. And what a fantastic, fabulous way to end this week. This show was amazing. I also want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch the show live, as well as everyone who is watching in the archives. Just because you didn't catch the live show does not mean you're not important. I appreciate you. I appreciate you so much. I appreciate your support. I appreciate you for watching the show and sharing the show. But I always ask, don't just watch the show. Don't just share the show. Support our guests. Visit their websites. Their website links are in the Facebook post. Follow them on social media. Reach out to them. Send them a message. Send them a text. When you reach out to them, please let them know Sharifa Hardy says hi. Now, if you're interested in more ways that I can help your business or you want to be a guest on the Roundtable Talk Show, please visit my website at asksharifa.com. Until Monday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific, everyone have a safe and a blessed week. Bye now.
Take care. Bye, ladies.